Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The person behind groundbreaking channel Imagination TV 12 years ago has expanded TV horizons now with digital media rights. We're talking a company of that name, and Chief Executive Officer Michael Hong joins me next. We'll migrate into the expanding landscape of TV technology next half hour. This landscape incorporates smart television sets and devices to virtual reality. Our guide, TechCrunch senior writer Anthony Ha. Also ahead, a glow show from Orange is the New Black's creator, another season of Transparent, and our classic trivia question of the week, saluting the reboot of Roots. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Block Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Happy to have you with us on this final day of May 2016. We hope you enjoyed the Memorial Day holiday weekend. Spend it as best you can. 85 degrees. The top of the hour, and you are tuned to the program All About the Tube. Happy to have you aboard. Some wonderful guests coming your way in the next hour, and as always, we invite you to be in the conversation. How do you do it? You raise your voice, you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have a chat room that you can use as well to get the voice going. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at blogtalkradio.com. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we will hear you and get you involved. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon near Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Michael Hong will be live with us from New York after these news notes. Orange is the New Black creator Jenji Kohan is the new series ready to debut on Netflix next year. Kohan will executive produce Glow, based on Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, the all-women's wrestling league that hit big in the mid-1980s via broadcast stations and TV syndication. Glow will be a comedy dealing with an unemployed actress who joins the league. Kohan will write with Glow co-creators Liz Flahive and Carly Minch to serve up 10 episodes on Netflix. Exact date to be named later. Transparent will return for a fourth season on Amazon fall 2017. Season 3 takes off this fall, and Amazon's renewal comes after getting the Peabody Award here in New York last weekend. And that is our news notes for today. And now joining us live is our first guest, the former founder of Imagination TV and currently the Chief Executive Officer of Digital Media Rights, Michael Hong. Michael, great to have you with us.
Good afternoon. How are you doing? It's good to be on. Thank you.
Very, very well, Michael. It's great to be hearing you for quite some time. You've been away from the scene in terms of for a lot of folks. What is digital media rights, and how does it expand what you do with Imagination TV?
Well, Imagination TV was my last company, which I sold to CJ Entertainment, which is the largest movie studio in Korea. And so we sold that channel, I want to say 2010, 2011. And subsequent to that, I decided to launch Digital Media Rights, which is a digital distribution company, with one of my fellow executives at Imagination TV, David Chu. And we started the company 2010. And so we're basically a distribution aggregation company. We work with Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu, and some of the other bigger digital stores in terms of placing and launching titles. And I think presently on Amazon, we probably have the most titles that we've launched out of anybody in the U.S. and maybe in the world. We have over 2,000 movies and TV shows that are live right now on Amazon Prime. In addition to that, we run another business, which we're very excited about, which is the publishing business on the OTT side. And, you know, we're definitely one of the leaders in that space. We've relaunched two channels this year, and we're looking to launch four more by the end of this year.
What are the two channels, and what kind of programming do they offer?
Well, the first channel, which is very near and dear to my heart, is called Asian Crush, and it's, you know, anything and everything that's Asian, predominantly films, but also TV shows and docs as well. And it's strictly an OTT channel And so we launched, we relaunched that very recently, a few weeks ago. And we also have a channel called Midnight Pulp, which is filled with genre films, kind of underground films, horror films. And we think, that has a tremendous amount of potential as well. So those are the two channels that are launched. You could predominantly find them on Roku, which is the leading, I think, OTT device at this point. And we're looking to launch, four more.
What kind of programming do you have in terms of Asian American films or Asian American TV series? Do you see what you're doing with these two channels as a stepping stone to perhaps turning them into a full-blown Netflix where you can have original content produced by Asian Americans, original series like what Netflix does with Orange the New Black and House of Cards, Narcos, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting idea. I think what we're trying to do is create a much more specific destination. I think Netflix and Amazon and Hulu, some of the bigger digital stores, I equate those platforms department store. And our channels are more boutique. Certainly for those that are interested, let's say, in Asian content, you can certainly dive as deep as you want in that category and, satisfy all your needs for Asian pop culture. And one of the distinctions that I would probably want to make, and it has some connections with my last company, Imagination TV, it wasn't so much the idea of trying to target the Asian American audience per se. It's about targeting Americans in general on all the wonderful things that Asian content has to offer. And that includes Asian American content, that includes a lot of content that really emanates from Asia. And there's a lot of exciting things going on in both areas. And I think the Asian market is very complicated. I think in my last company, we tried to create a linear cable channel, which we launched successfully. And the biggest issue I had with that is that it's really just one platform trying to cater to so many different types of segments, cultures, languages. In some ways, it's a lot more daunting than trying to create a Latino channel. And so I think the fact that we have this kind of digital opportunity to finally, realize the type of channel that we wanted to create with Imagination, but now we could do that with Asian Crush, and it can accommodate a lot of different types of, cultures and languages, and do it, very seamlessly, where there could be a lot of cross-pollination, a lot of crossover between the Asian groups, and I think really fully capture what, the Asian content potential is in North America. And like I said, that includes English language programming, new programs. And I think the plan right now is to really get our distribution going for each of our very specific verticals. And once that's established, I think we're very anxious to create and develop original content that, again, can, start from the U.S. with Asian American content, or it can actually be a co-production with Asian partners. But I think you need to capture the full flavor to really address what the Asian market can offer.
Well, welcome guest 983 into our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. You have a question or a comment for Michael, put in the room. And everybody else, you can use that room, or you can give us a call at 646-652-2906. Michael Hahn is the Chief Executive Officer of Digital Media Rights, and as you've heard, they're available on smart TV sets and smart devices like Roku with that particular service known as Asian Crush. I believe they have a Latin Crush service as well. We'll talk about that in a moment. So again, use our phone in the chat room and get your thoughts in. Coming up Friday on Smart Beach Televised, we'll be joining you a half hour earlier than normal, 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. Please make note of that. It's a half hour earlier than our normal situation, 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. And our lead guest will be the former executive producer of Nurse Jackie and Dexter, it's Clive Phillips, and his new series produced here in New York on Lionsgate for AMC is Feed the Beast. It premieres Sunday night, and we've got him before it. So check us out, Clive Phillips, Feed the Beast executive producer, live and exclusive with us, this Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific, right here on Tamari Channel Live. Also on the program, if you want some ideas about some good TV viewing this summer and beyond, well, we have got Linda Ahn, one of our favorite guests. She is the former marketing chief at Oxygen and currently the president of the wonderful research and analytics firm Truth Co. is with us. Clyde Phillips of Feed the Beast, Linda Ahn from Truth Co., both with us, live and exclusive with us. Remember this time, it's 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific, exclusively, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Michael, talk about Latin Crush. Does it work the same way as Asian Crush?
Yeah, Latin Crush is one of our channels that's in development as our own kind of owned and operated channel that we're developing. And whether or not it makes it onto our, 2016 calendar is still something that we're wrestling with.
And how would Latin Crush, once it's on the air, how would that differ from other Spanish language or Latino programming?
Well, right now, I think it's really just an outlet for content that we feel should make it out into North American audiences. Eventually, I think once we have our own owned and operated channel, I think the idea is to really create something that would be a destination for millennials and people that are more likely to be on various digital platforms. And so I think everything that we do, and I don't really want to make the distinction of whether it's going to be in language or in English, I think that's secondary, actually, to stuff that will resonate with Latin Americans or Asian Americans, for that matter. So I think that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to actually be, let's say, an intermediary between some of the existing cable channels that you find on the Asian space and the Latino space and some of the things that you may find on YouTube, for instance. And we're looking for compelling, innovative content that is really addressing what the market lacks. And so everybody, knows where to go to find their favorite telenovela or Korean drama, but we're trying to find something that will really resonate, outside of that. We call the U.S. a big melting pot, but, very little of that actually happens in the media space. And so you find Latin content, not finding too much crossover, same thing with Asian content, and we want to try to address that as much as possible with the way we treat the content, the way we engage our audience. And I think that's really the biggest value we can bring to the media landscape right now.
When you were running Imagination TV, you were trying to get placement on cable systems around the country as well as television stations, both full power and low power. How is the relationship you have with organizations like Roku and Chromecast and Apple TV that have come up with the smart way, if you will, for programmers like yourself, content makers like yourself, or content providers or distributors like yourself to get carriage?
That's a very, very good question, I think. And what I would say is that, to try to bring a product into the market that really was neglected or marginalized, in the previous paradigm, in the traditional paradigm, we spent well over $35, $40 million raising capital. And again, that was very modest. Some of the other minority channels, people raised north of $200 million to launch one linear service. And I would say Imagination at our peak, we had 70 full-time employees, and again, this is very modest. And it took that kind of effort to launch one channel. And what was very challenging about that was that even if you had done everything right and you had made all the right moves in terms of programming, in terms of marketing, you would still potentially have somebody in their, middle age, generally white, executive from the cable systems that could just flat out say, no, you're not getting in. And so the barrier of entry for a cable network is tremendously high. And I would say the capital barrier of entry is tremendously high. On the flip side, what I'm doing now with our OTT channels, we're going to launch six channels which will generate probably a lot more revenue than my one channel on Imagination. with a staff of 15. Now, this, six channels I'm talking about. And the type of content that we're going to be able to provide is going to be leaps and bounds better than anything you'll find on, let's say, a low-level cable channel. And so in some ways, the digital market for entrepreneurs and people really interested in addressing, you know, marginalized audiences is tremendous right now. And so that's why we're so excited about what we're doing. I think we're one of the few companies, because we are an aggregation service initially, that can actually launch the type of programming channels so quickly. We have over 8,000 feature titles that we've licensed because we're one of the top aggregators. So it makes our job the challenge. It's still very, very difficult. But I think the challenge is definitely more feasible in this climate with everything that's going on the digital OTT space.
Something, Michael, that you didn't have 12 years ago that is now happening is crowdfunding. You have Kickstarter, you have Indiegogo, they've raised billions of dollars through people like you and me for various projects, some include television pilots, and now we have finally at long last equity crowdfunding, where people can invest in a venture up to $1 million, maybe a little more depending on where they are, either through federal crowdfunding or state equity crowdfunding. Are you going to apply crowdfunding to what you're doing, and what do you think of crowdfunding as a resource to either help you or help other entrepreneurs develop programming for your channels?
Well, I think, you know, somebody just turned us on to that, that potential strategy. And I think it's very encouraging. For us, we're probably not the ideal kind of company because we're looking for, much more greater. We haven't done a Series A yet, but I think when we do, we're going to be seeking a lot more. But I think for the early startup, you know, we consider ourselves early stage, and we have a tremendous amount of traction already. But I think for the startup, it makes a lot of sense, and I wouldn't exclude, looking into that further. But I think right now there's a tremendous amount of interest in the VC community for OTT channels, and we've certainly been contacted a lot, and we're looking at it. From day one, unlike Imagination actually, we've tried very hard to be self-sustaining from day one, and I think we have been, and we've been able to generate a lot of operating income through our aggregation business, and that's really what's keeping the lights on right now, and it's giving us our growth capital. So, I think there's probably within the next couple of years, we'll be thinking a little bit more aggressively about, more accelerated growth capital. But I think for us right now, we're still kind of evaluating. But I think for a lot of startups right now, that's an excellent, potential.
When people use your service, they pay a monthly fee like Netflix or Amazon Prime, or do they pay by title?
Well, we all the options are available on our owned and operated channels. Like, you can get our titles and on all the and Google, for instance, operated channels. We have a hybrid model. We have an advertising model where, depending on the channel, we'll have up to like 80% that is commercial. But we also have an SVOD component where you can watch the additional 20%, let's say, and also watch commercial free. So we have a hybrid AVOD, SVOD model, and so far it's working very nicely.
Michael Hogg is the Chief Executive of Digital Media Rights, and he is with us live from New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York on this final day of May 2016. Happy you are aboard wherever you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio. If a question or comment for Michael, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, among our guests, Travis Nicholson. He is the co-star, executive producer and writer with known as Billy Ray Cyrus on the new TNT dramedy Still the King, which premieres in a couple of weeks on that channel. And then a week from Friday here on Tomorrow Be Televised, we have been waiting a long time for someone from Game of Thrones to be with us, and on Friday, June 10th, we will have somebody. Emmy Award nominee director Jeremy Podeswa will be our guest, and if the name is familiar, he directed the first two episodes of Game of Thrones this year, including the controversial resurrection of character Jon Snow. Jeremy Podeswa, director of Game of Thrones, he is with us live and exclusive next Friday, June 10th, exclusively, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Michael, gauge for me the whole Asian-American television marketplace. There are still at least two Asian-American networks that are on the air linearly. There's MNET America, formerly MNET. There's Nix or MyXTV. You've got Fresh Off the Boat on ABC, which was just a finalist for the Peabody Award. How do you scope the marketplace in total in terms of possibilities for Asian-American producers and content makers?
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't really stayed on top of it as much as I had when I was running Imagination, but from where I'm standing, I think there's definitely progress. But I think one of the things that we really, you know, for Asian-Americans, they have to keep on top of the technology and the different kind of distribution methods that are constantly evolving. And so, like I said, I think Asian Crush in many ways will be the type of channel that I always want Imagination to be, with a lot of diversity. I don't think there's a need to say, well, the Asian market is one way or the other. And I think it should be really a platform for talented content that is inspired by Asia or Asian Americans to be able to showcase their talent. And so I think that's what's happening on the digital front. And I think, you know, there'll always be a place for broadcast and cable major channels and programs like Fresh Off the Boat. But I think it behooves, you know, Asian Americans to really leverage and try to exploit what's happening with the digital revolution. And that's what we're trying to do for Asian content as well as all the other verticals that we operate in.
You mentioned Latin Crush as one of those verticals you've got coming up. What are the other three channels that you're looking at?
Well, we have Asian Crush and Midnight Pulp right now live, and we have another channel that we're going to announce probably in the next week or so, actually. And it's very near and dear again to my heart. It's going to be called UU, and it's really targeting millennial audiences with the type of content that I mentioned before, stuff that you won't be able to find in the traditional Netflix and Amazon, but also with a fresh kind of look, and hopefully trying to address that market segment that really isn't captured. So we have that in the pipeline, and we have three others that are down the pipe that we're going to announce within the coming weeks and months.
Mm-hmm. And before I let you go, what did you learn doing Imagination TV, both the success and also the pitfalls? How are you applying what you learned getting Imagination TV off the ground a decade ago to what you're doing now? And maybe in a way paving the way for other Asian-American entrepreneurs in TV to follow in your footsteps?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what I learned generally is that I think especially trying to address a market that really didn't exist before. There really wasn't, and I would probably still argue there really isn't an Asian advertising market. It's very limited. You'll have a Korean market, you'll have a Chinese market, mostly in language that addresses, a percentage of that market. to really start, you know, what I would say for entrepreneurs or anybody interested in this space is that really analyze and study the market. I think to create a market from scratch is incredibly difficult. I think what I'm doing now with DMR, the major difference is that we are not trying to necessarily be trailblazers, but we want to understand that there is a market already. It's almost like swimming and creating your business, you know, upstream as opposed to downstream. So we're definitely addressing needs that are identified in the market already. We're not trying to create, and in order to create something new, you have to be willing to sit on that business for years and years and wait for that market to develop, or just have tremendous capital resources to be able to push your way into that and create, you know, a need for that market. And what I would say, and what we've done successfully with Digital Media Rights, is that we've identified what the market requires and have created products around it. And that's infinitely more efficient and, I think, realistic to do. And like I said, with Asian Crush, we're going to realize much more, you know, success in terms of revenue and distribution versus what we ever achieved with Imagination. So, you know, that's something that I learned along the way. But I think the main thing is that, you know, you have to feel inspired to, you know, do whatever it takes to get it done, because God knows with Imagination, there was just an incredible amount of obstacles. And so just learning and being patient throughout that process, I think, is something that I definitely learned. Some of the contacts that I made were tremendously important to what I'm doing now. So, yeah, I would probably sum it up that way.
And just to be clear, you're going to go for having all six services available by the end of the year?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. We're trying to get it in by September, October, but definitely by the end of the year.
Right. And we will leave it there. Digital Media Rights' current service, Asian Crush and Midnight Pop, it's available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices like Roku, Google, Chromecast, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you want to know where you can find them and whether they're available in your area, as well as not just on smart TV sets, but other places too, here's where you go online. It's Digital Media Rights, just exactly as you hear it, digitalmediarights.com. That's digitalmediarights.com. Michael Hong, Chief Executive Officer of Digital Media Rights, joining us here in New York. Thank you again for being on. Congratulations on how your venture is doing. And we would love to have you back before the end of the year to follow up. And we really appreciate you being aboard and taking the time.
Thank you so much, Simon. Pleasure talking to you.
Same here, Michael. All the very best. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Michael Hong, Chief Executive Officer of Digital Media Rights, joining us here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And now these words from the fine folks at Audible.com and Amazon Company. If you're a fan of Fargo, I'm talking about the television series, you know that there's a wonderful brain behind that show. His name is Noah Hawley, and he's working on not just the third season of Fargo, which will come out next year, but also a number of new shows for FX. But he also has a new novel out, and you can now hear that new novel if you become a trial subscriber to Audible.com. It's Before the Fall. It's gotten rave reviews, and it's one of the 180,000-plus titles you can get right now through being a subscriber to Audible.com. Audible is a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. Like I said, 180,000 titles you can choose from at any time, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now. Remember, if you sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you can get Before the Fall by Noah Hawley or another free audiobook of your choice plus a one-month trial. And you know, with Amazon.com overseeing Audible, you know the customer service is going to be amazing. So check out this URL and have it be a subscription for you. audibletrial.com/televised, audibletrial.com/televised, one free audiobook, one-month trial, great customer service, great selection to choose from. It's all wonderful at Audible.com and Amazon Company. This is Tsunami Televised. We are talking all about the tube. We're with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. And we are here this Tuesday because it is the last day of the month, also because of Memorial Day weekend, which we hope you had a great one on. Again, we are with you Friday at a special time. That's this Friday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. Our guest, Clyde Phillips, the executive producer of the new AMC drama, Feed the Beast, that premieres this coming Sunday. Also, we'll check in with Linda Ahn, the president of Truth Co., one of our favorite guests. We'll find out what she thinks is worth your watching this summer and beyond, and we'll talk more about where diversity is at with the medium. It's all coming up this Friday. That's 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. When we come back in our next half hour, our roots-oriented classic trivia question of the week, and then our second guest, tech card Cedar Ryer, Anthony Ha, about all things TV technology. He joins me here in the Big Apple after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet. You're listening to it, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the best new game on radio, Fantasy Movie League. Check out your love of movies, fantasy style, tomorrow, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, that's the VTR available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this final afternoon of May 2016. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York. Glad you are with us. Got some wonderful things happening your way in the next half hour, including our classic trivia question of the week and our second guest of the day. If you have a question or comment, bring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We'll have that classic trivia question of the week coming up later in the half hour. But right now, let's get a check on where TV technology is at. Everything from smart TV sets and smart devices like Apple TV to virtual reality and even interactive television. Joining me live here in New York, one of the popular writers of the popular website TechCrunch, owned by Verizon's AOL division, senior writer Anthony Ha. Great to have you on board, Anthony. Welcome in.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Simon.
We just had an entrepreneur who is using smart TV sets and smart devices like Roku and Chromecast and Apple TV to make his mark. What do you think about where smart TVs and devices are at right now?
I think it's still very early. I think it's an area where there's a lot of different platforms, and I think it makes sense for especially entrepreneurs and people who are trying to do new content platforms to be exploring them right now. But it's also, kind of a challenging time because there's so many different options out there. So it's kind of hard to know where to prioritize. At the same time, you know that you have to kind of get in there early rather than, releasing, the millionth app on some smart TV platform.
Mm-hmm. We are hearing a lot of research and a lot of anecdotes that smart TVs, and especially these devices like Roku and Chromecast and Shield and et cetera, are how people are watching Netflix, how people are watching Hulu and Amazon and Crackle and things like Michael's services, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they may soon be how people are going to watch Facebook and Twitter and use interactive apps that you find on your smartphone and tablet. Do you trust this research and some of these anecdotes, or do you think that, as you said, even that use of smart TVs is still in infancy?
I think it's still in its infancy. I mean, I haven't, necessarily seen every single piece of data, but I think that, yes, it's one of those things where smart TV usage is absolutely growing, but at the same time, you look at, media consumption on smartphones, I think that's growing even more dramatically. So I think it's certainly going to be a part of the mix, but I think that people who assume that we're going to have the same kind of media consumption that we've had for the past few decades, where people just sort of sit in front of their TV and that's the main way they consume video, I think that is not what's going to happen.
Because for years we had this whole idea of convergence thrown at us where you'll be able to get anything, any piece of content, any kind of application on a phone, on a tablet, on a television set, and the way you use it, of course, is going to be up to you. So it sounds like we haven't reached total convergence or anywhere near that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's basically where things are headed. That's, I think, kind of what I was trying to say earlier is that I think smart TVs are going to be a part of the mix, but I think some, some media companies and some advertisers would like to think that that's really the main way they're going to reach consumers. And I think it's certainly going to be a main way that they reach consumers, but it's not going to be sort of, you know, the center of the media model the way that it has been in the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about Netflix and Hulu and Crackle and Amazon and other such services? Are they having a big impact right now in television viewing? And where do you see these services going?
I mean, I think they absolutely are. I think that, you know, that you can you think about why, you know, starting with HBO, but now all the networks want to do their own streaming services. I mean, some of that is, you know, broader trends in terms of devices. But really, I mean, it's Netflix primarily and secondarily some of those other services you mentioned that are all pushing people in the direction. And suddenly, you know, someone like CBS is kind of looking around and being like, oh, man, we totally have to be doing this too. You know, which is why you see CBS launching its own service, you know, launching and making, you know, the new Star Trek series exclusive to it. I think a lot of that is in response to what you're seeing on these streaming services. I think the challenge is that if you're Netflix, it's great. If you're Amazon or Hulu, still pretty good. But, like, once you start getting, you know, to the you know, third or fourth or fifth tier, then it's really hard to stand out and really hard to get someone to pay a subscription fee.
Because right now we're seeing, like, a branch out of these type of services. Full Screen is now in the marketplace. CISO from NBC Universal is in the marketplace. CBS All Access is in. But next year is when they get in with original programming like the revival of Star Trek, the spinoff series from The Good Wife's creators, Michelle and Robert King. Is there sort of like at a point where, hey, people are not going to take so many of these streaming packages or these streaming services?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the challenge. I mean, especially when you think about, you know, this whole idea that they're sort of getting rid of the bundle, right? So, like, people always complain about the idea that you have to pay for all these channels you don't care about, but at least the package as a whole doesn't necessarily add up to as much as, like, if you're like, okay, once you start adding up all these $5, $10, and $20 subscriptions, like, that can add up really quickly, and I just don't think that people are going to be willing, if they're buying these, you know, subscriptions a la carte, I'm skeptical that they're going to be willing to do more than, you know, two or three or maybe four or five at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that means that a lot of these have to move towards more of an advertising-supported model versus a subscription or at least exclusively subscription model.
Now, of course, you raise the question, will the advertisers jump in and support that model if the majority or at least some of the key services go in? Because right now Hulu is a major proponent of advertising, as well as the commercial-free option. Netflix is saying, total commercial-free, we're never going to go into ads. Crackle is now getting in ads. Do you get a sense that if let's say, most of these services do go advertiser-free, that A, the ad community will jump in, but B, the service themselves, they're going to try to do it in such a way that it doesn't provoke what a lot of networks are now facing, which is clutter. And now we're starting to see networks like TBS and TNT cut back.
Yeah, no, I mean, I absolutely think that advertisers want to be involved on these services. I mean, I think there's already a sense on just in terms of web video that there's way more advertiser interest than there is, you know, quality video programming. And I think that is something that, you know, that it's going to be natural for them to look at some of these other services as obvious places to put their advertising. In terms of, like, whether or not that's going to be a good consumer experience, I think that it's going to be a mix. I mean, it's going to be an experiment, and there are probably going to be people that do it better than others. And, you know, part of how you decide which service you're going to watch is going to be whether or not they deliver a good ad experience.
Mm-hmm. Apple, 9 months ago, had its chief, Tim Cook, say, the future of TV is apps. And that's when he introduced the long-awaited Apple TV second edition, or 2.0, where you could have all those millions of, or thousands of thousands of developers create apps for the television set, either adapt what they currently have, as well as those tablet apps too, or create stuff from scratch. We've seen organizations like Airbnb, Zillow, TripAdvisor, Guild Group get involved. A number of other key people have gotten involved since. What's your sense of how well Apple TV is working and the idea of people developing apps for Apple, not just putting video on, but doing interactive things, whether it is commerce, the ability to buy products, the ability to get to control which way a television app or a television series goes. Where do you think Apple TV stands right now with 2.0?
I think it's done reasonably well, maybe not the runaway success that they were hoping for. You know, I think that there were some numbers released earlier today about, you know, Apple now being third in terms of revenue for global set-top boxes in 2015. So, I mean, that's – and it jumped up, I think, I believe, from a ninth there. But that's, you know, in a landscape where it is still very relatively early and the numbers are still – you know, I mean, there's still a lot of room to grow. I think that it is hard to know, like, on a quarter-by-quarter basis exactly how it's doing because – Apple doesn't – it sort of has its other products category, as I understand it. And so, you know, sometimes it might tell us how much it sold if it's had a really good quarter. In its most recent quarter, I don't think it released any specific numbers. But I believe that what analysts are saying is probably about 10 million TVs were shipped in 2015, not necessarily all of the 2.0. All of that together, I mean, I think it just basically means that, yes, they're doing well. I mean, it's definitely, I think releasing 2.0, the 2.0 version has given it sort of a shot in the arm, and there are about now, you know, at least thousands of Apple TV apps, but I don't think that there's been a runaway hit yet. I don't think, you know, in the way that I think there's probably some early things that you could point to on a smartphone, on, you know, the Apple App Store, you know, something like Pandora or some of the social networking apps that I think really were sort of runaway successes because of the phone. And I think that we haven't quite seen anything on Apple TV yet that has sort of taken over in the same way. I mean, maybe that's just sort of the new landscape because there's so many different devices that you're not going to see one app sort of take off in that way, specifically on smart TVs. But I don't think it's happened yet. I think there is a certain sense of waiting of, like, what is going to be, like, the big, you know, hit Apple TV app.
Anthony Howe is one of the key senior writers at TechCrunch. If you've never read TechCrunch, you ought to. It's one of the best websites of its kind around. And, of course, it's available at TechCrunch.com. Anthony's live with us here in New York on Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm Apple Bannon with you live from New York here on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Anthony, let's hear your voice. And let's have you use this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We are back next Monday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. Among our guests, Travis Nicholson. He's the co-star, executive producer, and writer with Billy Ray Cyrus of his new CMT dramedy, Still the King. It premieres in a couple of weeks. And we've got Travis on to talk about his unique relationship with that achy, breaky heart person. Still the King, Travis Nicholson, the co-star, executive producer, and writer. He joins us live next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And if you didn't hear our announcement from last half hour, coming up on Friday, June 10th, among our guests, Emmy Award-nominated director from Game of Thrones, Jeremy Podeswa. Yes, he's the person who directed the first two episodes of this sixth season on the HBO series. And yes, it was, one of them was the episode with the controversial resuscitation of character Jon Snow. Jeremy Podeswa from Game of Thrones, he's live with us Friday, June 10th, at a regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Apple has its Worldwide Developer Conference coming up in a couple of weeks, Anthony. How much emphasis are they going to place with their developer community on Apple TV 2.0 and getting them to fire up their imaginations?
I think that it's going to have to be a pretty big focus because, again, you know, it certainly I think they've had some success with launching this new TV app platform, but I don't think it's been a runaway hit or a home run or whatever metaphor you want to use yet. So I think that this is going to be an opportunity for them to really try to, you know, jumpstart things again. And I think so. I would imagine that, you know, both the TV and the watch are going to be a major focus because, I mean, you know, I think that the phone will certainly be talked about. You know, iOS, the iPad, all these things will be talked about, and I think there are certainly challenges there as well. But I think these are really the watch and the TV are the two platforms they're really trying to get off the ground, and I would imagine that they're going to get a lot of attention.
Unique app right now on Apple TV, and one that we've covered pretty extensively on this program, and also on BK Live, which you were on a couple of weeks ago, which is locally on BRIT TV, available nationally on YouTube, is a app called Little Star. It is a way to get virtual reality shot programming on the television set, where you use your Apple remote or you use Siri to manipulate which way the picture goes. You can have it go horizontally or vertically or diagonally or 360 degrees. And we had Tony Mugavero, the chief executive and one of the co-founders of Little Star on the program. They're doing very well in terms of getting content. They're a very popular app on Apple TV. They're also playing the other side of the fence, which is to make their content available to be displayed on a helmet process like Oculus or Next VR or Samsung Gear. And with what they're doing, it raises the question of whether virtual reality really does have a future as much on the television set as it does with these devices.
I think that, yeah, I agree that it's something that again, is so sort of diffuse right now, and there's sort of all these different devices that you can use. But, I mean, certainly the way I imagine it's going to play out is that we're going to see, initially, it's going to be much more about looking at some of this content on your phone, on your TV, rather than having a separate, you know, Oculus device or Vive device or what have you. And I think that's going to be the way that people are going to get familiar with this. And then, you know, the people who are more passionate about it, you're going to start to see more and more VR-specific devices. But I think the first wave, you know, the majority of content is going to be consumed on devices that we already own, whether that's a smart TV or a smart phone or a tablet.
Mm-hmm. We had the digital content new fronts a few weeks ago, and it seemed that every single one of these new fronts had a participant say, we're either going to launch a VR series before the end of this year, or we're going to do a content lab, where we'll invite people to create content in VR or AR, augmented reality fashion, for us. Is virtual reality going to develop a lot more faster than we believe?
I don't think. I mean, I think it is a reality and it's coming very quickly. But I think I'm not necessarily convinced or haven't seen any evidence that it's going to come. You know, like that in the next year we're all going to be watching things in VR. I think what you're going to see is it's going to sort of, you know, increase incrementally, where you'll notice, oh yeah, like I've been watching more 360-degree footage. I've been like more willing to watch things on Google Cardboard or some other device, you know, thing on my phone or on my TV. I think that the point where the majority of people have access to some kind of, you know, serious VR headset, I think that's still several years off. But I think really what you're seeing is a lot of these media companies realizing that this is going to be important, not necessarily in the next 6 months, not necessarily in the next 12 months. But, you know, it's important to kind of get a foot in the door and figure out what's happening so that when it really does take off, they're not left in the dust.
Mm-hmm. Going back to Apple for a second, and specifically Apple TV, one thing that's fascinating is to see how the developments with this product are covered and just as much not covered in the press. It seems that every time that Tim Cook can be public, like, for example, last year on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, he was not asked about Apple TV. By the same token, when CNBC, for example, reports on Apple's quarter, or when they do something like cover an Apple conference, they don't seem to emphasize Apple TV that much, even though John Ford could say at one point, hey, Apple TV is doing pretty better than we think. It's something to watch. By the same token, also, it sounds like Apple is very hush-hush about publicizing themselves, even though a few months ago they hired a TV publicist to work on Apple TV. What's your sense about how Apple TV wants to get the word out that, in fact, we've got this device, we think it's something that you want to know more about?
I think that it's an extension of the sort of Apple approach to promotion in general, which is that it's you know, going back to Steve Jobs, it's really been a lot about control, which is not to say that you don't promote something, but that you don't like the idea of just having everybody sort of talk about it in any way they want. But it's much more, we have our specific ways that we're going to set it out. And it's all about, you know, creating almost this sense of scarcity of like, oh man, like if we could be the ones who get an early copy of this, that would be amazing. I think the other reason that people haven't talked about it as much since it launched, I think, is that they're just, you know, the launch itself was exciting. It got a lot of attention. I think since then there hasn't been a lot of really concrete stuff in terms of, you know, exclusive content or, you know, major updates to the platform or anything like that, which I think tends to drive a lot of the excitement. I think it's also that, you know, you're talking about different things in terms of, you know, how someone like TechCrunch or a really techie site would cover. I mean, we still cover probably Apple News every single day, but it's also true that the kinds of updates they have haven't necessarily happened, whereas I feel like, you know, someone like a more mainstream TV show, they probably want to wait until Apple TV is really in a lot of homes before they start talking about it, because that's when people will care.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, we have communicated with Apple. We would love to have somebody from Apple TV's Worldwide Developer Conference talk about what Apple TV's role is going to be, or to have Eddie Q, who I understand is the executive who is overseeing Apple TV, come on. One more thing about Apple. You know, a couple of months ago, there were all the reports that Apple was going to get into content production. They are actually going to do a couple of series, including a drama series with Dr. Dre. Have you heard anything more about whether Apple might try to pull a Netflix and be an original content provider on an ongoing basis?
I got to be honest with you. I'm really scratching my head about this stuff because it does seem like everything that's been announced so far, I think there was, supposed to be some sort of, documentary show about, App Store developers and things like that. I mean, it just seems very small scale and kind of confusing in terms of why Apple is doing it because, I think that on some level, it might make sense for Apple to do some programming itself if it's having a hard time, I think there's certainly been a lot of reports about Apple having a hard time talking to the existing networks into actually participating and having a real sort of, TV offering as part of Apple TV. And so if they can, fill in some of those gaps with their own programming, I think that there's a possibility that would make sense. But it seems like everything that's been indicated so far is so small that it really, that seems very far off.
Anthony, we have about a minute or two left, and in the time we've got remaining, what do you think is the next TV technology that's going to be hitting our radar screens? Is it ultra high definition? Is it high dynamic range? Is it VR? Is it augmented reality? And what do you think about the possibility, for example, we might have interactive advertising and interactive programming? We've heard talk about CBS developing a new version of the Twilight Zone where they would actually do a choose-your-own-adventure kind of format where you use your smart TV set and a process called Interlude, which has VC venture capital funding to determine either using your remote control, your smartphone, tablet, which way the show goes. Or do you see something like TouchJet Wave, which is a TV set with a plug-in device that allows you to turn your TV into a touchscreen and put any smartphone or tablet app on and manipulate it any way you want?
I'm not basing this on any real data, but my gut feeling is certainly the next big change is going to be on the VR front that we're going to – I think it's going to take a while to get there, but I think that's really – where a lot of the energy is going. I think on the interactivity, I've certainly, checked out what the Interlude guys are doing and what other people are doing, but I think that's such a different experience than sort of normal TV watching that we might see more of it, we might see it grow, but I don't think we're going to see it become, a dominant part of your normal TV watching experience because it is, to me at least, so very different from what I'm used to. I think interactivity – we might see more of it. It'll sort of sneak in around the edges where little things might, there are ways to sort of interact with ads or things like that. But I think seeing a full length show that has that degree of it could go one way or another. I think that's, I'm skeptical that we'll see that on a network television show anytime soon.
If you want to check out TechCrunch, and I hope you do, it's a wonderful source of news on what's going on in the tech field, including TV technology, discussing most of this last half hour, go to TechCrunch.com. It's www.techcrunch.com, TechCrunch.com. It is, of course, part of Verizon's AOL division, and it is definitely worth your while to read on a regular basis, and you'll catch Anthony's work. By the way, Anthony was on BK Live several weeks ago. If you want to catch that segment we did with him, go to www.youtube.com/BRICKTV. That's youtube.com/BRICKTV. Anthony, pleasure to have you on this phone for the first time. I hope it's not the last. It's been a great time having you aboard. Let's have you back soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Anthony. Enjoy the rest of your week. Take care.
You too.
Anthony Haas, senior writer of TechCrunch again. You want to catch it 24/7, TechCrunch.com. Now it's time for our regular feature, the classic trivia question of the week. And if you know the answer to the question we're about to pop, you can win the wonderful novel Nobody Dies in Hollywood. It's the first novel of the acclaimed writer-producer John Wilder of Streets of San Francisco and Centennial Fame, published by Balcony 7. This week, we're saluting the reboot of Roots, that premiered last night on History, A&E, and Lifetime. Many of you might know the original Roots back in 1977. You know that Kunta Kinte, the main character, was done by LeVar Burton, who is an executive producer on the current reboot. And Ben Vereen was memorable as Chicken George. Here's a question. Who played Fiddler on the original Roots in 1977? Who played Fiddler on the original Roots? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, please enclose your name and your mailing address. If you're first with the Crank Sector, you will win Nobody Dies in Hollywood, the first novel by John Wilder. You can also use Facebook and use this Twitter option to get your answer in. It's Twitter, #TWBT. Twitter, #TWBT. That's Twitter option made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch. And they're the folks that invite you to create your own social soundtrack. You can do it at hopscotch.com. And if you just missed the question, no problem. I will post it tomorrow on my own Facebook page and on my own Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, you got to be in it to win it. Do so. We're going for our second winner in a row. Judy Biondo of Sarasota, Florida was our winner last week. Let's make it two. And to do that, be in the game. And if you do, all the very best. Friday on Tomorrow Televised, remember, we joined you a half hour earlier than normal, 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 11:30 a.m. Pacific, with Clyde Phillips, the executive producer of the new AMC drama, Feed the Beast, produced here in New York by Lionsgate. Also, we'll find out from Linda Allen, the president of Truth Co., what's worth your while to watch this summer and beyond, and we'll get her thoughts on expanding diversity in television. And once again, next Monday at our regular time, among our guests, Travis Nicholson, the co-star, executive producer, and writer with Billy Ray Cyrus of his new dramedy on CNT, Still the King, premiering in mid-June. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed as well, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Thank you all for a wonderful month of replays, over 13,000 going into today. And we really appreciate all of you checking it out, especially those of you that checked out our episode this past Friday with the wonderful creator and producer, writer, Peaky Blinds, Stephen Knight. Just that alone, in the last 4 days, nearly 200 replays. So thank you for that. blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, we also have our show 24/7 available on podcast at iTunes.com. You can download to your smartphone or tablet, take us on the go anywhere you like. And remember, we're also available with other Blog Talk Radio podcasts on Apple TV 2.0 with the iTunes podcast app. Now you can see and hear us through Apple TV 2.0. You can get that wonderful set-top box through your local Apple store or online. We would love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? And what's your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going? We love to hear. We're all ears. So email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're from. I do return emails in 24 hours. You can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, we love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates are Amy Mexico and Candace Williams. Amy Toad, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator and chief executive of this very special enterprise, is Mr. Al Levy. Tomorrow's Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, information, and inspiration, and an Amazon company. But Tomorrow's Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you very much for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day and a great start to June. We'll be back on Friday. Remember the special time with Clyde Phillips of Feed the Beast and Linda Ahn from Truth Co. 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio. Be safe and be great out there.